We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say. Your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, everyone. I am Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. Perpetual Chess is a weekly chess interview show where we talk with accomplished chess players, authors, and personalities about their lives, their careers, and how to improve at chess. Perpetual Chess is brought to you through the generosity of its Patreon and PayPal supporters and by Chessable.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Perpetual Chess. We have one of my favorite modern authors joining us this week. I think a lot of you will be familiar with at least some of his work. He is a grandmaster, the two-time Swedish Olympiad team member, and he has written four books that are all excellent. He has written Pump Up Your Rating, co-authored The Woodpecker Method with Grandmaster Hans Tikkanen, The E3 Poison, and this year he is out with a new book with Quality Chess. All of his books are with Quality Chess, and this one is called Street Smart Chess. And I am excited to talk about all of them. He also saw a very impressive rating gain in his early 20s. So he's walked the walk in addition to talking the talk. He raised his rating from about 2100 feet A to 2450 in less than 2 years at that time, as of course is famously discussed in Pump Up Your Rating and Woodpecker Method in particular. And of course, his friend Hans Tikkanen also had some great success. So without further ado, we'll be discussing all this stuff, but let's welcome him to the show. Grandmaster Axel Smith, how are you?
I'm fine, and thanks, Ben. Nice to be here.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I'm a big fan of your books. And so we were just discussing before recording, you're joining us from Sweden, Axel, your native Sweden. Where in Sweden are you?
We live in the southwest part of Sweden, in Lund, a university city.
Okay, and how is life there? How is the pandemic in particular?
I think it's fine, at least for me and my family. We are still visiting friends and relatives with a bit more responsibility than normally. And the kids have to stay home from school when they are a little bit sick, but I think that's fantastic. You can be home with a kid that is not really sick. That's a lot of energy.
Right. Yeah. So it sounds.
And with all the chess tournaments and other stuff canceled, you have more time with family, and so we enjoy that as well.
Yeah. Same here. I mean, as I've said on the podcast before, anyone who's in reasonable health can't complain too much under these circumstances. And Axel, as we mentioned before, we pressed record. Of course, we're recording in the middle of the candidates, which keeps us entertained, but we're not going to talk about that because by the time listeners hear about this, they will know the winner. So let's get to your books, Axel. As I've mentioned, I'm a big fan, and in fact, a friend of the show, Neil Bruce, and I even did a podcast about the Woodpecker Method, which of course has been especially popular amongst adult chess players aspiring to improve, a very sort of original approach. And of course, a lot of people have kind of followed in your footsteps. But for any listeners who aren't familiar with the famed Woodpecker Method, Axel, could you tell its story just in brief?
It was my friend and the grandmaster Hans Tikkanen who invented it, you can say. But of course, it was not his own idea from the beginning. But back then, we trained a lot together. And when I visited him, I saw him. He had a lot of book about science, about the brain, and also chess books. But when I asked him about his projects, he didn't want to say anything. And that was not because he wanted to keep it secret. It was just because he didn't want to tell anything until he had tested it on himself and he was knowing more what to say. And then that summer, he improved a lot. He did his Woodpecker Method during the spring, and then he had fantastic results during the summer. And the idea is basically that you do some tactical exercises, not too hard, and you do them maybe several hundred, and then you repeat them over and over again. And for each session, you repeat and you do it a little bit faster. And then finally, maybe you should be able to do them all in one day. And the idea is to develop some automatic pattern recognition that helps. It will make you calculate faster, but also more exact.
Yeah, and I understand that, of course, as you mentioned, Hans Tikkanen had great success with it, as you wrote about in Pump Up Your Rating and then Woodpecker Method. And then you undertook this project yourself, correct?
Yeah, I did also do the same because I was, of course, impressed with his results. And it requires a lot of effort, but I had the time and I had the ambition back then. And
we you make it sound like you don't have those things anymore. So do you not have the same time and ambition as you did in those years?
When I started to become serious with chess, I did not have any outspoken goals. I was just curious to learn chess, to know more. And then suddenly I had some good results and I thought, okay, I can become a grandmaster, maybe in a year. And a year later, I was not even better than I was a year before. And it took me, I think, 8 years after I said that until I became a grandmaster. And when I finally succeeded, I thought, okay, this is it. It will be very, very hard to improve more. Probably it's possible. But yeah, I have other interests as well. So since 2016, I've not had any ambitions really, but I enjoy playing and I still want to win the Swedish championship. So for a month before that tournament, I come back to training chess seriously.
Yeah, well, first of all, I just wanted to say, I mean, a lot of people say they're going to become grandmaster and don't even make it. So a lot of us would sign up for taking 8 years to do it. But I know you've also, I believe you mentioned in Street Smart Chess, or maybe it was in our correspondence, that you still do Woodpecker Method getting ready for a tournament. So, and for example, the Swedish National Championship. So when you return to the puzzles, having done it all this time, how good is your recall at this point?
No, it's not perfect at all. And even if I recognize the puzzle and I think I know the answer, I try to calculate through the variation as if I have not seen the position before. And I think that is the idea also to do that.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because I've been doing a lot of spaced repetition. I've done the Woodpecker Method, although full disclosure, I didn't make it all the way through the advanced puzzles. I'm like 21 to 2200. And I've noticed that it's a strange feeling when you come across puzzles that you know you've seen before, but you can't remember the answer. And I feel like my brain often doesn't know what to do. Should it be trying to recall or should it be calculating? So in that situation, what do you recommend?
To calculate, I think. And I think it's quite normal that you remember the solution, but actually when you check the answer later on, you realize that you remember the wrong solution, the one you found the last time, but was not correct. And if you do like that, then this is a sign that you are trying to recall too much and calculate too little.
Okay. Yeah, there's that issue. Sometimes also I can remember the answer, but nothing else. Like no corresponding moves. I just know what the right first move is.
Yeah.
And sometimes I have that feeling and even that's wrong.
Yeah, okay. But then you have to calculate because, we are there to practice. It should be hard. It should not be too easy.
Yeah, this is true. So, of course, I get the sense, I don't know how many books, and of course, it's also quite popular on Chessable, the Woodpecker Method. So I don't know how many books or courses Woodpecker Method has sold, but certainly amongst the online chess community, it seems to be extremely popular. So Axel, I'm curious, how often do stories about people doing the Woodpecker Method reach you? What have you heard from readers?
Quite often, actually. I get some pictures in bring the book to strange places, and some players that says, I improved 600 points when doing this book 10 times, and I started to even become a member in the club for the first time. I'm not sure if it's true or not.
Yeah. Well, the next time someone interviews you, tells you that they gained 600 points, have them email me because I want to interview them. Okay.
Yeah. I only know the first name of this person. I don't even know the last.
Okay.
One.
Well, we'll correspond about that offline.
Yeah.
Your friend Hans Tiikanen, what's going on with his chess game? Has his ambition also dialed back a bit?
Yeah, I think he also decided that a life as a chess player is not what he will appreciate. And it was his interest in science and in brain made him study psychology. Since a few years now, he has finished his studies and works as a psychologist.
Okay.
So
still might be
he is not playing much chess nowadays.
Okay. And if you don't mind my asking, Axel, what about you? Are you working as a chess trainer or just writing your books on the side?
I'm an editor for the Swedish chess magazine. So that's my main income. So,
okay.
And I'm writing in some newspapers in Sweden as well. So maybe I'm working 50% half time.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good. So I had a few more questions about Woodpecker Method. And then, of course, there's so many other books to discuss. So one question I had, and I've actually, speaking of Hans Tiikanen and studying psychology, I've interviewed a few cognitive scientists who are also chess enthusiasts, like Dr. Christopher Chabri and Jana from Thinkers Publishing. I'm drawing a blank. Oh, Jana Kravets. Sorry about that, Jana. And one question I wonder is, we know from reading the scientific literature that you alluded to that spaced repetition is definitely helpful for memorizing things such as opening sequences. But when it comes to tactics, it's not as clear to me that it would be as useful as just getting better at calculating. So how do you think about the difference between pattern recognition and calculating, and like how a player who wants to improve should balance working on the two?
Yeah, I think you're talking about spaced repetition, and I'm not a scientist and I'm not an expert in that, but I think the point with that is to remember things, and you should repeat them with longer and longer intervals. It's right.
Yes.
You should not repeat anything too often because then it's too easy. The brain has to work to improve memory. But here you're not trying to remember things. You're more like trying to get some automatic pattern recognition in your brain. So I don't think it's really the same thing. And here you should also not have longer intervals between the sessions. So you should do it quicker for each time.
Okay. And just out of curiosity, when you do pick back up the woodpecker method, when you ramp up your training for the national championship, how well do you remember these puzzles at this point?
Actually, I use other books as well. So I'm not only using the woodpecker method. I'm using the method, but I'm not only using that book.
Yeah. So of course you're a grandmaster. So your recommendations won't apply to everyone listening, but just out of curiosity, what other books or resources do you like?
I'm doing some of this, the chess.com tactics trainer.
Oh, okay.
And then you get a random sample of exercises, but when you have made a lot of exercises, and I've really made a lot there, then you get them back over and over again also.
Yeah. Yeah. I know some people really pump up their ratings by memorizing all of the puzzles, although I've heard that that's getting harder to do.
And actually, I think they are a bit too difficult, but okay, they're also quite beautiful when you find a solution of a difficult puzzle. So, yeah.
Now, Axel, I interview titled players all the time for this show, and some are of the opinion that you need to do like analog training. You need to actually set up a chess set, and a book is better than a tactics trainer. So I'm getting the sense that's not, I mean, you know, no one knows the correct answer, but I'm getting the sense that that's not your opinion. You're fine with doing this stuff on computer?
I think so. I don't like screens too much, actually. But I think for the woodpecker method, it would be good to... I've not used Chessable for the woodpecker, but I'm sure it's good to do it there.
Yeah, I always, I mean, I obviously I'm a big fan of Chessable. In fact, we'll be taking a break to hear an ad from them in a second. But I always say tactics and opening courses in particular are what it's best for.
Yeah, so because if you use a book and if you want to put the pieces on a board, then you use a lot of time just for this practical thing instead of really training.
Yeah.
So if you need to go through the solutions, then it would be better to do it on a screen.
Yeah, and also people like us with kids running around at home, it can be hard to have the quiet moment to set up the chess set, whereas you can just take out your phone and do some tactics.
Yeah, and when you come back, the chess set has a different position, probably.
Exactly, or someone tried to eat one of the pieces or whatever it may be. So on that note, Axel, we're going to take a break to hear from our friends at Chessable, and then I want to talk a little bit about Pump Up Your Rating before we get to your new book. This is your weekly reminder that Chessable.com has a ton of high-quality material. Whether you're looking to learn a certain opening, want to see the latest Super GM repertoire that has been published, want to find a tactics course appropriate for your level, whatever it may be, go to Chessable.com and have a look around. Don't forget they have tons of cool free content too, like their short and sweet courses about various openings. And all of the things that they offer feature their proprietary move trainer technology, the secret sauce that lets you actually remember all of the new chess moves and opening sequences that you learn. So once again, Chessable.com, check out their ever-expanding excellent library. So Axel, Pump Up Your Rating is also quite a well-rated book, and a lot of the players I've interviewed on the show have recommended it. And in that book you list, and of course this was, I believe, your first book, and in it you list four key components of chess improvement, which are: number one, analyzing your games and making a list of mistakes; number two, using a De La Maza-esque program to study tactics, which now we would call a woodpecker method-esque program. Number three, doing serious opening work via the creation of opening files in Chessbase. Now that one, for players rated below 1800, you might need to modify that in some way. But first, I'll just read them and then we'll discuss. Number four, mastering approximately 100 key theoretical endgames. So I found that advice to be pretty useful and pretty sort of holistic. Has your thinking evolved about that at all? Or do you stand by those four tenets, Axel?
What is not in the list is
playing. Right, yeah, good point.
And maybe when I wrote this book, there was no other life for me. I was playing every tournament I could. I played some 200 games some years. But now when I'm playing one or two tournaments a year, I notice that playing is a good way to practice. If you don't play, you are getting rusty.
Yeah, I think it.
So at playing, of course, as the number one, maybe in this list.
Yeah, it's easy to take that for granted, but I think you're right. I mean, because you do have analyzing your games as number one, but you need games to analyze. So,
And for those end games, I think it's not the most important thing, but compared to the others, it's quite easy to do. To get a good opening repertoire, you need to spend years and a lot of hours, but these end games, you can maybe do them in a month and then you are done. And then you need to repeat them a few times, but not much more than that. So it's maybe not the most important, but it's so easy to do. So you have to just do them.
Okay, yeah, because that's another one where you get some mixed reports from the people I talk to about whether or not you need to know the strictly theoretical ones, or if it makes more sense just to sort of study the endgame masters. So do you have, I'm putting you on the spot here, Axel, but do you have any specific for people who do want to learn those key end games? Obviously, there's lots of resources out there. Do you have any favorites?
It was a long time ago now. I did my own database and then I repeated from my own comments after that. But I'm sure there are many good books.
And of course, that you mentioned the number 100, 100 endgames you must know comes to mind for me. Now, regarding openings, and I noticed this in Street Smart Chess as well. I think Street Smart Chess in particular is probably geared towards like the higher rated club player. I would say maybe 1800 and higher. Now, a lot of our listeners are, of course, familiar with what ChessBase is, but may not have it or may not feel that it's necessary because their games are often being decided by sort of tactics or like fairly large mistakes. So I don't know if you're the right person to ask, so feel free to pass if you don't think you are. But do you have any ideas about like substitutes for developing an opening file or sort of a modified version for players who are not really at the ChessBase, Stockfish, Leela, Grandmaster prep level?
When I was young, I had my opening repertoire in Excel.
Oh, wow.
It was like font 8 or 6 or something, very, very small. And it was space for 14 moves. After 14 moves, the page was done. So I could not write more than 14 moves. And I had like 5 or 6 pages with very lot of moves there. This was also before I used ChessBase. But okay, this is not something to recommend.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Nowadays, I, for myself, I try to be less ambitious with openings. Just to read a book and then try to play it without even creating an opening file. But every time I try, I finally end up making a file anyway, because this is the way I've been grown up.
That reminds me, I've gotten sidetracked by some other podcast book projects, but I was reading E3 Poison prior to us scheduling this interview. And you say something interesting, and I recommend that book for anyone looking for a sort of solid setup for white that's not as theoretical. And in the intro to that book, you refer to chess possibly entering a sort of post-theoretical, so that's in air quotes, era. So could you explain what you mean by that a little bit, Axel?
The post-theoretical era? That was your I mean, before the computers, there was not so much theory compared to today. So finding concrete lines and more theory it always paid off. And also when the computer started to make analysis, it was more and more openings you can examine. But nowadays, I think it's like, many openings are not worked out, but many lines are worked out. And if you want to surprise your opponent, it's harder to do it. So then people in the top players, they are more trying to surprise the opponent, get a playable position instead of trying to really prove an advantage with white. And I think for that reason, people are starting to play less theoretical lines than before, just to get a game with white, because you can't really get an advantage anyway. So
yeah,
it does not pay off so well to go into these theoretical lines.
Yeah, I actually saw a quote from Anish Giri just the other day. Obviously, with the candidates ongoing, someone retweeted something where he said when he's getting ready for a tournament like the candidates, his primary objective is to surprise his opponents rather than so back.
Yeah. And I think, okay, this is for the very best in the world, but I think also for club players, this it's some true in this, because even for the average club player, there are many more books available and many more. It's much easier to find games in chess base and so on. So even the average club player knows his openings much better. So you need to surprise in that level as well.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask about, because I think what a lot of club players struggle with, and as a dad, I'm sure you can relate to this, is we feel like we have so many holes in our game to work on. And on the other hand, it's easier than ever for someone to look up what openings we play. So you don't want to be a sitting target. But on the other hand, if you feel like, you know, your end games are bad, your tactics are bad, you know, every phase of your game needs improvement, it can be hard to be like, okay, I'm going to have three different opening lines that I'm going to trot out, keep my opponents off balance. Do you have any suggestions, or is it just like an unsolvable problem?
Yeah, working on openings is maybe not the most efficient way, but if it's enjoyable, that's important as well. And also when you work in openings, you work in other parts of the game as well. If you try to calculate in the same time as you analyze, just don't look at the computer to see plus and minus. And also try to understand the type of position. You learn other parts of the game as well. So I think working on openings, it's not, the idea is not to find an advantage for white, it's to learn chess.
Yeah. And again, that brings it back to E3 poison, where you talk about the fact that you're not emphasizing memorizing moves as much as sort of learning typical structures and seeing a few games in action. So, and of course, both in Pump Up Your Rating and in Street Smart Chess, you kind of lean on the work of other grandmasters, players you've looked up to. So it made me wonder, Axel, is there a player or a trainer who has influenced you more than any other?
There are a few players in Sweden. When I was young, we had a grandmaster from Malmö, Stellan Brunell. He came to our club and he was going to play a simul. And I heard he played it French. So I thought it was a good idea to play the French myself. So I played one e6, and then I did not know the second move. So I did not play d5. And then I continued to play that French for 10 years. But since he was visiting our club from time to time, I looked up to him, and he was also the first grandmaster I bet. It was in a rapid game, but I was very happy, maybe a bit too happy actually, afterwards. Maybe not the best winner.
So sorry, what was the grandmaster's name?
Stellan Brunell.
And so obviously, so too happy.
And I think he's a quite a good practical player also, so you can learn things from him.
And so how did you react? What did he get upset when you were overly excited for beating him?
Yeah, I think I just mentioned it a bit too many times, but then he just told me, look at the final standings in the tournament. Where are you and where are I?
That's very funny.
Yeah, and he was clearly ahead of me. And then a second player is, of course, Ulf Andersson. We had some sessions with him in Lund when I was starting to become a strong player, and it was incredible to see him analyze. He's very, very humble, but even so, he has an opinion of every position. He can just see a position, and in no time he can explain what he thinks, the plans for both players, and his interest for chess is never ending. He can do chess all day.
Yeah,
this is after 50 years of playing professionally. So it was incredible to see him.
Yeah, he's an absolute legend. And Grandmaster Johan Helsten, I believe, is from Sweden originally, right? Yeah and he did a video with U.S. Chess School where he goes through some of Ulf Andersson's end games, and it's amazing stuff. Definitely, I'll link to that, and definitely recommend listeners check it out. Okay, so Axel, we're going to hear from another sponsor. We're going to hear from our friends at Aim Chess, and then I want to talk about the new book.
Not every chess player has a janitor to help them improve at chess like Beth Harmon did. For those of you who don't, there is aimchess.com. Aim Chess has a web-based algorithm that collects and analyzes your games from chess.com or Lee Chess, and then it creates personalized study plans based on your weaknesses to help you improve. It might highlight specific openings to work on, tell you to tighten up your tactics, or in my case, tell me to manage my time better. Then it gives you puzzles and advice with the goal of helping you improve your chess faster. You can check out Aim Chess for free. And then if you decide to subscribe, please use the promo code CHESS30 to save 30%. That's CHESS30. The details are also in the show notes. So for now, let's get back to the interview.
So Axel, I've really enjoyed Street Smart Chess as well. I'm really impressed with the consistent quality of the output of your books. And we should mention, by the way, that these books are available on Forward Chess, which I always enjoy reading that way. And there's also a free excerpt of Street Smart Chess, in particular on Quality Chess, and probably the older books as well. But so you relied on some friends for this book. Could you explain the structure of the book to our listeners?
Not really friends. It's model players in the world's elite. So I think this book is maybe discussing a theme that is not a part of Pump Up Your Rating at all. Practical chess, how to play against weaker players, against stronger players, how to play when you want to avoid theory or when you want to make the game theoretical. And to do so, I wanted to learn from an expert in every field. So I contacted some players that are known to be good and in those things, and some accepted to be a part of the book. Some of my wishes I could not get,
but I think I might know one of those.
I will not mention any names.
He's got you've got a chapter from Grandmaster David Navarra, who legendarily nice guy, who's been on the podcast. I think that was my favorite chapter, how to beat lower rated opponents. From Aryan Tari, who I believe you've worked with in the past, Grandmaster Adiban, Grandmaster Laurent Fressonnet, and Magnus's trainer, Peter Hein Nielsen. And then there's a chapter about Magnus, and conspicuous in his absence is Magnus Carlsen, but he's a busy guy, we understand. So amazing stuff. And as I mentioned to you in email, it's funny that you mentioned Practical Chess, because it reminds me of the book Secrets of Practical Chess by John Nunn, which you said you have not read, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit below your level at this point, but I think you would see some similarities, which is a compliment. I think they're both highly useful books. Again, I think it's for the best for players rated over 1800, but there's definitely, it's one of those books where there's nuggets to be extracted no matter your level.
Yeah, I will read it. I enjoy reading chess books, of course, so I will check it out.
Yeah. I think you'll find it worth reading. Yeah. So you tell, in addition to, of course, the chess instruction, which is not wholly relatable on an audio-only podcast, you tell some stories about just spending time with these players. Like, for example, going for walks in the woods with Grandmaster Navarra, and your general interactions with him. Could you share a few of those stories for us?
Yeah, Navarra, he's extremely generous with his time. It was nice to meet him. We had a long session there in his home city, Prague. And afterwards, he sent me a lot of emails correcting things, improving the text, improving the variations. I didn't really know how to react because he was so friendly and so generous.
Yeah, very, very commonly uttered words about Grandmaster Navarra. I've also had good interactions with him and heard nothing but good things. And again, I really enjoyed his advice about beating lower rated players as well. I mean, he really has obviously given a lot of thought to that because he plays a lot of Bundesliga and other league type games. And then Grandmaster Tari, I enjoyed that you sort of you quoted him talking about sort of the struggles of deciding whether or not how seriously to pursue chess. Obviously, he was, I believe he was a world junior champion, obviously a top junior player, but still anyone who's not on a world championship track or even some who are might have to decide at some point. So what was it like hearing him talk about that?
It would have been easier for him to live in another country because he lives in Norway, one of the most expensive countries. And to make a living as a chess player is, of course, more difficult there than it is in a cheaper country. But I've not met him now for some time due to the pandemic. So maybe he's still struggling if he wants to go ahead as a professional player or he wants to make a civil career. But I hope he will play chess because, yeah, when he plays, he enjoys it, I think.
Yeah, but it's tough. And obviously, someone who's achieved as much as he has in chess, obviously, if he applied that intellect to other fields, there's great potential in what he could do. But on the other hand, chess is a great game, and obviously, chess is booming in Norway. So it's, you know, you would hope that players like him could find a way to make a good living.
Yeah, and of course you should mention that as well. There are some advantages to live in Norway, chess-wise, of course.
Yes, you would think, but I interviewed Grandmaster Jon Ludvig Hammer in the very early days of this podcast, probably 2017, and he also mentioned, and I think like he might be an example of someone for whom things are going better because he does Twitch streaming and of course does some stuff for Play Magnus. But he also mentioned just how hard it was in Norway in particular because it's so expensive.
Yeah.
Did that, if you don't mind my asking, I know you lived in France for several years. Did cost of living impact that decision or was it just your love of the mountains?
We just wanted to enjoy another culture and learn the language better. My wife is a French teacher, so she speaks French. And yeah. No, the cost of living, it doesn't matter for us because we don't buy things, so we have no real cost
okay.
at all.
Yeah. That's a good way to live. And getting back to Street Smart Chess, so I think I mentioned, I believe my favorite chapter was Navarra's chapter, but I did find them all to be useful. And these grandmasters, I mean, they clearly gave you a lot of their time. They're annotating games for you in the book with lots of insights. But I was curious if you had a favorite chapter yourself, Axel.
It's the same, the Navarra chapter.
Yeah. Have you, I'm again putting you on the spot, but have you read his book?
I think I read one book, but there is another one coming that is not really printed. I tried to order it, but I got a message that it could not be sent yet.
Yeah, there's a new one that's a collaboration with Marcos, I believe.
Yeah, it's that one. But I read one of his, My Chess World, I think the title is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that one's supposed to be amazing, and I unfortunately have not gotten a chance to read it yet. But
yeah, do it.
Yeah, it's high on the list. But
for my own books, I do not really read them. The Woodpecker Method, of course, I did a lot of times, but Street Smart Chess, I have not really opened yet because I'm afraid of finding some silly mistakes when I open the book.
Yeah, and that one was a unique structure because you're leaning so heavily on the insights of the elite players that we mentioned. So how did you go about that? Was it like Skype phone calls or emails? Or I know you spent time in person with Grandmaster Navarra. What was the approach for these different chapters?
I think I met maybe half the players in person, and then it was Skype calls with the rest.
Okay.
If I remember correct.
Yeah. And then I have to ask Axel, in the introduction to Street Smart Chess, you of course thank our friends at Quality Chess, Grandmaster Shaw and Grandmaster Agard, and for publishing all of your books. Although I know that Woodpecker Method in particular has sold so many copies that I'm sure and your books are so good that I'm sure they're happy to sell them. But you say your next book is going to be sort of even more out there. So I have to ask, like, what you have in mind.
Yeah, I got this question once before, and then I couldn't even remind what I was thinking of. Because I wrote this preface, I think, a year and a half ago. It was
Okay.
But now I think I was thinking of a book with the title Climate Gambit to gather some openings and make a repertoire. But find some quite strange connections to climate.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But and are you still thinking of doing that, or do you have something else in mind now?
No, I'm not thinking of this idea anymore. Actually, I'm writing a book about the Swedish champion in 1967, who had a brilliant career but very short. He quit chess just a few years later, but he had an interesting life as well.
Oh, but, interesting.
That book will be in Swedish, so it will not really be for a broad audience.
Yeah, and you mentioned in our emails that you primarily learned English through reading chess books, which your English is great, by the way. But it made me wonder, do you write in English or do you write in Swedish for these books?
I write in English.
Okay.
But I edit myself a lot. So that's why I prefer to write instead of like doing a podcast like here. It's right. Nice to be here, but the possibility to change what you have written over and over again, I like that.
Yeah, well, I and the listeners appreciate you doing this because we've got a lot of fans of your books listening, myself included. So your next project is going to be this biography, and you're writing about the candidates right now, which will be already out. So we won't speculate about the world championship. So what kind of stuff, when you write for the Swedish chess periodicals, what kind of stuff? Are you covering the news, or are you writing like improvement articles, or all of the above?
It's only 4 issues per year, so you can't really have much news. Everything is already old when the magazine comes to the people. So I try to do some longer text about players, about tournaments, but not really about a specific event. Try to find things that you cannot find in the internet.
Oh, interesting.
And of course, I'm not writing the whole magazine. I'm also editing it and getting articles from other writers.
Okay. And I get the sense from your writing, you know, you're talking about players like Niels Grandelius, who you know, obviously, and Tiger Halop Persson. I get the sense it's a pretty close-knit grandmaster community in Sweden, but I don't have a strong sense what the chess culture is like there more broadly. How is the chess culture in Sweden?
I think it's good. For me, I was fortunate to live in Lund, where we had a lot of ambitious players, and 4 of them became GMs in the same time period. And we also have some other GMs joining us. But I think it's good. The federation is quite active with chess in schools and also for the elite players. We had weekend tournaments, so there is a lot of online tournaments as well. No, I think it's good for the player who want to live on chess. Maybe a problem is that Swedes are not used to pay for their trainers, so it's difficult to live to make a living as a trainer in Sweden. There is no culture to pay for such things.
So how is it arranged? Like it's just expected to be done without compensation?
Yeah, the clubs have some trainers, and this is done on a voluntary basis normally. I like this system, but it's for the professional players, it's harder.
Yeah, that does sound pretty challenging. So I've only got a couple more questions for you, Axel. One is I often like to ask the podcast guests for their own favorite chess books. What were some of your favorites?
Okay, I liked Marines Learning from the Legends.
Yeah,
a lot. I should read it again when I think about it. There are a lot of books I like.
Yeah, Grandmaster Naroditsky also is a big fan of Learn from the Legends. That's another one that I've heard recommended so much. I really need to read it.
There is, I think, an author, Willy Hendricks, maybe.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I got to interview him as well, but a big fan of both Move First, Think Later and on the origin of good move.
That move first, think later. That was the title I was thinking about. That was a splendid book, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Very, very original. We were discussing our kids before we started recording. You've got a 3 and a 5-year-old, so they're a bit young, but are they doing any chess yet?
The 3-year-old is chatting while we others are playing chess. When you listen to him, you will think he's a chess player. He can say, "Oh, the knight should jump, and the king should advance," but he cannot play. He don't know the rules at all. He's just listening to the talk and repeating the same things.
Huh.
Our daughter, who is 7, she has just started to play.
Okay, and last thing. So, of course, you've mentioned you have interests outside of chess. So, what else is occupying your time besides chess and family, Axel?
I think my main interest is running the marathon.
Oh, wow.
I'm running like 20 kilometers a day. So, I think I spend more time running than working.
Wow, every day?
Mostly.
Does your body wear down?
I did not start from scratch. I built up during several years, and when I started, I started to run because I thought it was good for my chest, for concentration and focus and all that. But then, I enjoyed running, and it's also good that it's so different to chess. In chess, you use your brain. You just sit there, and when I run, I cannot use my brain at all. So I like this contrast.
Yeah, probably a good time for ideas to gestate, to grow. When you run, are you do you listen to music or audiobooks or podcasts, or are you just alone in nature for all those hours?
For now, we have a lot of friends here in my city I'm running together with. So we're discussing things. Yeah.
Sounds good. So Axel, before we let you go, we got your 4 sort of improvement tenets along with play tournaments from Pump Up Your Rating. But do you have any sort of closing advice for our listeners, whether it be chess or life advice?
In chess, I would say just enjoy. Maybe that was not so much mentioned in Pump Up Your Rating. And for myself, I think I was too ambitious, too strict and too hard with myself back then. So nowadays, I enjoy chess more. And I think, you can do it and you can get results in the same time. And what I've learned from chess, maybe it's just to live cheaply. When you travel around, you don't have much things. You can just live with your laptop and maybe a few clothes, maybe not. And I think this way of living, it's so easy. And nowadays, for me, as I said, we don't buy any things mostly. So we don't even need an income. For me, I can stop working now, and I can stop working for 3 years, 4 years. I'm free.
That's because Woodpecker Method is a smash hit.
Okay.
No, but it's your success.
I could wish.
Well, your success is well deserved, Axel, in any event. As I said, big fan of your books. Definitely recommend listeners check them out, especially listeners rated, say, over 1600. But I look forward to more projects in the future. If anyone wants to reach you, Axel, you don't seem to be too active on any social media. Is your information public, or do you prefer to keep that information private?
I think my email, I have a website, schackstudion.com. Maybe Schackstudion is not so easy to spell because it's Swedish.
That's okay. I'll find it and put a link to
and
it.
I think my email is there. It is there.
Okay. All right, so it'll be a bit of a hunt for anyone who wants to email you, but we'll put it in there. So Grandmaster Smith, thank you again for all of your contributions to chess literature, and thanks for taking the time for this interview.
Yeah, and thanks. Nice to be here. Nice to talk to you.
Okay, take care.
Yeah, for you as well. Bye-bye.
Thanks, as always, to my producer, Matthew Passy. Thanks to you all for listening. And thanks to those of you who help spread the word, whether it be
positive reviews on podcast platforms, telling friends, social media, all that stuff helps get the word out and it is much appreciated. By the way, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at BennyFishel1. You can join the Perpetual Chess Facebook group to continue the conversation, sometimes even with that week's guests. The Perpetual Chess Instagram page is back in action as well at Perpetual Chess. And you can also find all these links on the Perpetual Chess webpage, perpetualchesspod.com. But of course, the main purpose of these closing credits is to thank everyone who supports Perpetual Chess financially. Without you all, we would not be able to put out such a consistent and hopefully quality product. So thanks so much. It really means the world to me. And in particular, I would like to give thanks to the following people and entities, starting off with my friends at chessable.com. Aside from that, I would like to thank David Lazarus of LazmanChess.com. He is the coach of Dave's Young Tigers on Lee Chess, our friends at Quality Chess Books, the Capital City Chess Club, the Abysmal Depths of Chess blog, Adapta Interactive Web Designs and Services, the Apprend Chess Twitch channel, A Needy Deer, Austin Clough, Benjamin Porto, Bill Sigler, Kathy Carr, Chad Oliver, the Charlotte Chess Center, the Chess Central's Chess Blog, ChessMood.com, Chris Flanagan, Chris Lott, Dan O'Hanlon, Daniel Hee, Danny Davidson, David Schreiber, I am Dimitri Schneider, I am Eric Rosen, Eric Tam, Ewan Richardson, Farhan Thawar, Faraz Sawaf, Gary Foreman, Glenn Downing, Greg Harfst, Greg Shahadi, Gregory Gulick, Guvin Manet, James Holyhead, James Kennedy, Jeff Martinson, Jens Green, Jeremy Nielsen, John Jernigan, John Rockefeller, John MacArthur, Kelly Palmer, Kevin O'Callaghan, King Selt, the King's Crusher YouTube channel, one of the original chess YouTube channels, Lucio Casada Silva, the Law Offices of Stuart Katz, Matthew Feeney, Michael Kahn, FM Michael Oblin, Mike Zelazny, Mr. Mike Shahadi, the legendary Mr. Dodgy, the Nerd Nays Twitch channel, GM Peter Prohaska, Peter Sodhi, the Playmore Chess Academy of the Hamden Chess Club, Reuven Fisher, Reverend Roy Fry, the Seattle Chess Club, Shane Unger, Stefan Kelty, Stephen Martinez, Sven Gearson, Thomas Stanix, Thomas Tachenko, Todd Bryant of Strong Chess, Todd Kennedy, the Vintage Patsers, which is a chess.com improver group. You can look them up. Wayne Beam, William Hogarth, and I also would like to thank Aaron Waffler, Ace Viega, Adam Ralph of chessengland.com, Adrian Gutierrez, Al Hastings, Alan and Maggie Sue, Alex Pejas, Alexander Markovics, Antonio Cancino, FM Andre Tarakov, Dr. Andrew Perry, Angus McLeod, Barry Hessian, Bill Juniper, Bill Moran, Bill Trammell, Brad and Andy Rosen, Brett Howard Lynn, Brian Chase, Brian Mullis, Bruce Scott, Brian Tillis of Palm Beach Chess, Cameron Davis, Chad Hilton, Chess Potzer Spain, Dr. Charles Snodgrass, Chris Wainscott, Christopher Baumgartner, Christopher Shabri, Christopher Wood, I am Christoph Zalecki, also known as Chess Explained, Coach J's Chess Academy, Corey Butson, Costa Carras, Courtney Fry, Craig Mallon, Daniel Ginsberg, Daniel Naylor, Dave Saylor, David Bleskacek, David Brown, David Hamblin, David Cramley, Dalen Shelton, Dennis Parrish, Dirk Decker, FM Donnie Ariel, Dwayne Edmonds, Ed Daly, Ed Mead, Emmanuel Langual, Robitaille, Ethan Smith, Hallelujah Cat, Ian Mason, Fide Arbiter, Felipe Melo Pereira, Fox Valley Chess Club, Francis Letart Lavoie, Dr. Frank Tortoris, Frank Zananis, Gary Andrews, Gary Lewis, Gautam Narula, Geert Vandervelde, Gene Stewart, George Harris, Giovanni Russo, Han Schut, Harish Srinivasan, Howard Vihan, Jacob Kovach, Jason Apollo, Jason Murray, Jacques Parry, James Aspinwall, James Benastia, James Muir, Jason Woolham, Jaydeep Chakrabarty, Jeff Anderson, Jeffrey Martello, Yep Hoyland, Jerry Wells, Jesse DeCumos, Jesse McNulty, Jim Ratliff, Joe DeSano, Joe Valdez, Joel Thomas Ramos, John Tooley, Juan Almaguer, Dr. John Fallon, John Fernandez, John Fontaine, John Hartman of US Chess, John Jeffrey, John McMurtry, Jonathan Slater, John Quist, John Tully, Jose Rodriguez, Justin Gardner, Jen Shahadi, Joel Rocky, John Thompson, GM Josh Friedel, IM Kare Christensen, WGM Katerina Nemsova, Kelly Palmer, Kevin Pryor, IM Kostya Kovutsky of the Chess Dojo, Krishna Gopala Krishnan, Kyle McAvoy, Larry Cook, Larry Reiforth, Laura Belyovsky, Macaulay Peterson, Mark Fitzpatrick, Mark Miller, Mark Wilkins, Marco Bulatovich, Martin Knudsen, Martin Krug, Matthew Passy, Matthew Tedesco of SeattleChessMeetup.org, Matthias Plock, Mechanics Institute Chess Club of San Francisco, Michael Allard, Michael Hudson, Mike Clem, Mitchell Fabian, Nate Goble, Nate Solon, Neil Bruce, Nigmat Malijanov, Nicholas Isabel, Olaf Mueller Michaels, GM Pascal Charbonneau, Passy Passanen, Paul Bain, Paul Clarkson, Paul Sweeney, Paulo Santana, Peter Lux, Queenside Management Limited in Switzerland, Randy Temple, Ricky Grijalva, Richard Hollenbach, Richard Tucker, Robert Callahan, Robert Tichy, Robert Turner, Rory Coleman, Rory Yearwood, Ryan Berg, the Say Chess YouTube channel, Scott McKinnon, Scott Shepard, Sean Krause, Sebastian Finsterwater, Walter, Sergey Magakon, Seth Ruzicka, Shane Unger, Silver Knights in Richmond, Stefan Roller, WGM Tatyav Abrahamian, Tim Brennan of TacticsTime.com, Tim Seymour, Timothy Ha, FM Timothy Wall, Tom Edsel, Tomas Komanich, Tony Rattel, Tyron Price, Vishnu Srikumar, William Brock, William Peterson, FM Zhao Chang of Chess1000.com, and last but never least, Zhivko Stoyanov. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we will catch you all next week.
Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business?
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.